Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, Jim. It's time to break out the bubbly. We actually have a good martini. We go to a lot of folks covered this yesterday, but this is the hot air version of the story. David DeLayden, the undercover activist who recorded hours of footage of Planned Parenthood employees discussing fetal tissue, now faces one last charge in court. On Tuesday, a judge handling one part of the case against DeLayden dismissed a misdemeanor charge for trafficking in fetal tissue. The Center for Medical Progress, the group run by DeLayden, published a statement about the dismissal, saying that Judge Diane Bull's swift dismissal of the bogus charge against CMP founder David DeLayden of trafficking human organs is the latest confirmation that the indictments from a runaway grand jury in Houston were a politically motivated sham all along. He still, I believe, faces the charges about forging documents to gain access to these Planned Parenthood officials, false IDs and so forth. But, Jim, they're right about the sham DA, and obviously it's pretty clear from the videos that DeLayden was not actually interested in buying the body parts of aborted babies. So at least this judge has some common sense.
You know, Greg, I am very glad that all of a sudden it is no longer criminal to do undercover work or to use hidden camera investigations. I had really been concerned that the entire staff of 60 Minutes was suddenly going to be on the run like Richard Kimball in The Fugitive. This has kind of been a staple of television journalism for decades, but all of a sudden now it's against the law. Oh, okay, fine. You know, Mike Wallace is on the run. Get him. You know, Tommy Lee Jones is chasing him, so... It's good to know journalism is legal. Glad to know that, and that's great. So in regarding forged documents and stuff, did he, like, make a fake driver's license or anything, a fake passport, anything like that?
I honestly don't know the exact details of that. I think he may have. I don't know.
Because if you make a fake business card that's not honest, I'm not sure that's a crime. Hello, I'm Irving Schmidlap. You know, oh, you just broke the law. You know.
Yeah, I don't know if it was an actual ID. I'm sure he used an alias to get into the different events that he recorded these interviews at. So, yeah, I guess we'll have to dig a little deeper on what the background on that charge is. But he's one step closer to being a free man again, which should be good.
If you were to say, you know, if there's anything that makes the world better, it's criminalizing efforts to expose criminal behavior.
Well, we laugh, but California just passed a law, which hopefully will not pass constitutional muster, which not only makes it illegal to record conversations if the other person is unaware of it, they would also crack down on any website or any media entity or anybody who actually airs that footage. So we're not out of the woods yet.
The First Amendment, man, they're it's optional. It's almost as optional as the Second Amendment, foreshadowing one of our later martinis, huh, Greg?
Bill of Rights. It's only for some people. Okay, on to the bad martini now, and we were pretty tough on FBI Director Jim Comey yesterday for his explanation on Monday about how the FBI really couldn't have done anything differently to stop Omar Mateen. It had a number of opportunities to interview him, both after making really troubling statements to his coworkers, then popping up as an acquaintance of some sort with a suicide bomber from his mosque. And Comey says, you know, looking back, there's nothing else we really could have done. Turns out there's a whole lot more they could have done, because over at WFTV in Orlando, Carla Ray, a reporter there, reported on this and also tweeted out the story. And she said yesterday, in case you missed it, per law enforcement source, shooter Omar Mateen and wife Noor Salman visited Disney together in April. Law enforcement source says Disney notified FBI the couple may have been casing Disney in April. And then her third tweet, June 1 through 6th, during Gay Days, Omar Mateen visited Downtown Disney and Pulse Nightclub per law enforcement source. So, Jim, as recently as 2 months ago, the FBI was tipped off about very suspicious behavior from this guy and his wife, who is probably going to face the music quite heavily now. But apparently that wasn't enough of a warning from a guy who had made all these other ominous statements and connections over the years.
Stephen Miller put it very well. Quite literally, Mickey Mouse is doing more to protect us than the FBI these days. It feels like a very frustrating pattern that every time you see some sort of terror attack or something, you know, there's some shocking attack, it then all of a sudden all the red flags that look pretty clear in retrospect were on government's radar. And in this case, you know, Disney contacting the feds to say, hey, we're pretty sure these folks were casing the joint. You throw that. Apparently, he had two trips to Saudi Arabia, and one of them was costing, like, was a luxury one costing thousands of dollars. The wife apparently knew, tried to talk him out of it, but didn't bother to call 911. Real hero there. You go down this list, and it just seems just more and more disturbing that there, you know, you kind of look at this and say, if this guy's not on, wasn't under active surveillance, wasn't considered serious enough or enough of a menace for them to really, you know, do something about it, how many more are out there, Greg? I mean, it just seems like, you know, like this would make us, for those of us who never engage in terror activity or terror connected activity, we live lives and we think there's nothing that would ever give us reason for suspicion. Maybe you go on YouTube, you're reading, you're curious about Al-Qaeda, you watch a YouTube video and, you know, the NSA flags you or something like that, right? But this guy's, you know, it's just piling up, you know, evidence after evidence, case after case, suspicion after suspicion, and nothing's done about it. That's at the crux of this debate here. The gun control and all these other aspects, what was driving him? Was he tortured by his repressed sexual desires and all that nonsense? Look, at the core of it is, can the government protect us? And at this point, the answer is pretty clearly no. And I don't say this, you know, with any joy. I think that a lot of good people are working for the FBI, doing the best they can with what sounds like an ungodly workload. I thought it was yesterday. I was reading it was 900. Now apparently it's more than 1,000 open cases of suspected ISIS folks in the United States. What do they have to do to get rounded up? Right? I mean, like, you know, just what is that threshold? Because in this case, this guy never tripped that threshold, and as a result of it, you know, close to 50 people are dead.
You got me thinking when you mentioned what Stephen Miller said, that Mickey Mouse is doing more than the FBI to protect us. As the father, and we've mentioned this before, of a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old, that would be the greatest episode of Mickey Mouse Clubhouse ever.
Oh, hands where I can see him. Oh.
Hey, kids, you want to help us catch terrorists? Let's check out our mouse tools. We're going to have a stun gun.
I'm picturing like Disney's 24. Copy that. Oh, I don't have time to explain. I will shoot your wife in the knee if you don't tell me where the bomb is.
Goofy's doing enhanced interrogation techniques. And
hope you like water. See, there's our good martini, Greg. Now everyone's walking around with like Disney's 24 CTU.
I would pay to watch that show.
There we go. Coming soon to Three Martini Lunch Animation Studios.
All right. Oh, we got the laughs out, so now we can go to Trump and the crazy martini here. Trump, he was just endorsed by the NRA, big time. It was a great endorsement.
Bigly.
First time he was ever a Republican candidate, was ever endorsed prior to being the official nominee. It was in Louisville. You were there. It was a big event. Trump gave a rousing speech that had almost nothing to do with gun rights. And Trump has now tweeted out just in the past hour as we record this on Wednesday morning, I will be meeting with the NRA, who has endorsed me, about not allowing people on the terrorist watch list or the no-fly list to buy guns. And of course, that is one of the big things that the Democrats are pushing now. And I would guess that if you were to do a snap poll, it would initially be pretty popular. But the funny thing, as we've talked about on the terror watch list and the no-fly list, Jim, is there's a little thing missing on that called due process.
It's rare you see a presidential candidate come out against the Second and Fifth Amendment simultaneously. Fourth Amendment for unreasonable search. One, you're not notified you're on the terror watch list. I guess that's supposedly, you know, a good idea. Otherwise, the ISIS people would either go home or go dormant. But then as a result of that, if you end up on that list erroneously, if you're not a terrorist and for some reason the government thinks you're a terrorist, there's really no way to get off it. I understand you can apparently write a letter to DHS and request to be taken off the either the terror watch list or the no-fly list. They will not let you know what the evidence is against you. They will not let you know who made the accusation or what prompted this. As a result of that, if you know, someday it went, we had a really bad podcast, Greg, I could call up the FBI as an anonymous informant and say, this guy, Greg Corumbus, is connected to some Greek terror group or something like that. I don't know if that by itself would be enough to get you on the terror watch list, but presumably if enough people did that, you'd end up on that. This is how we end up with Steve Hayes being on the no-fly list. I believe at one point Ted Kennedy was on the list, and no, it was not because of Chappaquiddick or the idea that he was actually a threat to other people, but apparently because he shared the same name as somebody connected to the IRA. I know the no-fly list is connected to names, not actual identities or something unique to you, whether it's DNA or Social Security number or something like that. So as a result of that, this is how you end up with the stories of a 2-year-old ending up on the no-fly list or terror watch list. These are not good lists. They're simply not clear enough. They're not verified enough. And the idea that, well, you, if you know, the, somebody in the executive branch can put you on a list and you get no judicial review, there's nobody else who looks at that and says, no, that person can't, you know, that person, there's not enough evidence there. You just don't belong there's no reason to consider that person a suspected terrorist. The government can abridge your rights. The government can take away your rights because somebody put you on that list. And there's no recourse, no appeal, no way to get off of it if you are genuinely innocent. This is a terrible system. And as a result, naturally, you know, Trump is signing on to it. As you mentioned, the NRA did endorse him. The NRA endorsed Donald Trump earlier than any other nominee in its history. And this is why you're not supposed to do that, because now Wayne LaPierre and a lot of good folks at the NRA look really stupid. And it gives me no pleasure to say that, but it was kind of predictable. This was the guy who had supported the assault weapons ban in the past, a guy who'd, you know, made some comments in support of gun control in the past. He's not a reliable friend of the Second Amendment, and now here they are. It'll be interesting to see how that meeting goes. If the NRA says no, does Trump lash out at the NRA? You know, this is a terrible situation for the NRA, terrible situation for gun owners and friends of the Second Amendment. It's crazy martini, but it's not an entirely unpredicted one. It's very hard to see how this works out well for America's gun owners.
Definitely bad news. And maybe the line we used about Hillary a few days ago about if these are my principles and if you don't like them, I have others, might apply to both major party nominees this year.
Gary Johnson. Never looked so good. Gary Johnson's going to have the best year for libertarians ever just sitting there. Doesn't have to do anything. You just see the yard signs. Gary Johnson. He's not Hillary Clinton, and he's not Donald Trump. What more do you need to know?
That's a pretty catchy slogan. The only thing I would add to the conversation about there probably are some Greek terrorist groups somewhere, but there's probably fewer than most people would suspect, because Greeks would rather sit around doing nothing, drinking dark coffee and complaining about a lack of terrorism groups to join than actually starting one. So,
very good. I was waiting for some sort of joke about bickering amongst themselves or something like that. But, while we're making fun of our respective ethnicities, I understand the IRA could have been much, much more dangerous if it was not for the hangovers.
Let the emails pour in.
Jim. There we go. Mr. Garrity, how can you joke about such a terrible thing?
See you tomorrow.
You know what? All these terrible threats will be handled by Disney's CTU. So. Anyway, see you tomorrow, Greg.
That would be ratings gold. Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.